The Around the NFL Podcast. Dances with Hog Mollies in the Moonlight.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Gregory Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
In the moonlight.
I like that. Throw That's a little a Hog one. Mollies in there.
I don't know if anybody's...
I liked it so much, I'll let you say Gregory. Give me a break. Gregory.
Is that on your birth certificate?
No. The extra G on the end.
Just better than what Handsome Hank calls you around the office.
What's that?
Greggles.
Greggles.
That's shameful.
Better also than what Greg calls Handsome Hank on the Dave podcast, Dave Damashek show, which is...
Oh, a sidekick?
Sidekick.
A lot of love, a lot of friendship. It's real.
A lot of heat. Welcome back to another edition of the podcast. Very nice show, very action-packed show, a lot of stuff to get to, between all the news happening in camp and two phone calls we're going to be on, including one megastar of the NFL.
Megastar. Ian Rappaport?
Definitely not Ian Rappaport, but...
An MVP candidate last year and one of the most well-known players in the league.
Why am I teasing it? Tony Romo is on the show today. He's going to call in. We're going to talk to him about the Cowboys and their chances in 2015, Mark. And, Mark, are you going to let him know about your adjectives about his team's defense from last summer?
We have limited time with Romo. I'm not going to soil it with that list. Because the list was also not accurate, let's stay accurate.
And let's also mention, Mark, you are leaving us tomorrow. Well, tonight, three of us are going to see Wilco, courtesy of the boss.
That's right.
Thank you, buddy.
Well, I think we owe him money, but yeah.
Oh, do we owe you money?
No, that was going to be, my treat.
Wow. Well, I don't know. I assumed that I didn't know it was courtesy. That is,
I thought it was a courtesy
nice.
Purchase, but
I didn't give you a choice either. So in that case, then
that's what I mean.
Yeah, that's why.
Maybe I didn't want to be assuming.
No, you should. You should have assumed.
But Mark, after the Wilco, was that, Wes?
Mark was going to say, why isn't Wes coming along for the concert?
Well, I didn't. I thought. We've asked Wes to go to concerts before, and his reply is always the same. I don't go to concerts or whatever.
I am a big Wilco fan, but I would probably rather read a book than go to a live music concert.
I don't think they recreate the sound well in a live setting.
I love small venues and surprise concerts that you don't expect it going to be. This band that you've never heard of is awesome. I love that, but I don't like going to see 10,000 people.
You're just walking down the street or whatever. You turn the corner. Hey, there's a band playing right there. Wow, these guys are good.
Exactly.
Accordion ripping.
Why is that so peculiar?
A guy in overalls slapping on his knee with a pipe in his mouth.
And yes! It was like that. This is real music. This is
exactly
none of that corporate stuff. There's no.
Oh, it's one of my favorites. The pop-up concert. In my local village.
What's so controversial
local
about this?
Village.
I've never heard of it.
There's no handling fee to go see this band.
What is Wilco going to play that I've not heard already?
Well, their new album.
There's definitely a disconnect in how you view live music and how other people do.
That's okay.
That's fine. I'm not saying. Just like I asked you back in September if you wanted to join us to see Tom Petty, and you said the same thing. It's like, I like Petty, but I'm not going to.
Right.
We asked Counting Crows, too, and I get why you said no to that.
Traffic and deal with a crowd to hear music.
All right.
You know what? You could say the same thing about Wilco.
Yeah,
let's be fair.
All right.
All right. So anyway, but after the Wilco show, Mark, you're going to Canton. You're doing all sorts of things.
If I get on the plane.
You're going to the Hall of Fame. You're going to that old Indian burial ground out in Berea.
Yep.
A lot of stuff. You looking forward to that?
I am. It's a great time of the year. First football game of the year. Mm. To be there in person, what more could you ask for?
It's a bad game, but.
Well, it isn't, though, when you've been waiting months and months for it. But you're right. Around two or three series in, it's a snoozer.
Plus, you could see Connor Shaw. I believe Dwayne Bowe called him one of the top two athletes in America.
I got to take a look at this team after what we've heard in Cleveland.
Thoughts on Terrell Pryor's hamstring injury, Mark? I know that must have hit you hard.
Well, it seems to me that there's enough PR around this Terrell Pryor thing that they could have another four Josh Gordons and he'd still make the team. It seems like it just seems destined to happen unless his leg falls off.
Another four Josh Gordon sounds like quite a party.
Yes, it does.
All right. So, yes, Mark, we're going to miss you when you're gone, but you have a lot of good work to do. Today's show, yes, Tony Romo will be on the line. We'll try not to offend him, try to get some answers out of him. Look forward to that. We're also going to talk about maybe some quarterbacks like Tony Romo, veteran QBs that are facing a lot of heat this season. It's time to get something done. Time waits for no man. Undefeated is time. True story. Also,
fiction.
We're going to get on the line my old buddy at the Journal News in Westchester, New York, and now the NFL media insider, Ian Rappaport, known as @Rapsheet. That's where you can follow him on Twitter. He's going to call in. He's all over the country right now, traveling and reporting and doing the information man thing. So we're going to catch up with him and talk about some of the places he's visited and some of the things he's seen.
Tease for that, too. He was just in Colts camp. He might have some good information on the rookies.
He's got enough followers, by the way. How about following around the NFL on Twitter?
Sure.
It's a lot less than Rapsheet. Give me a break.
Dan, you and Rapsheet, career arc. Who's better career arc between you and Rapsheet?
I would say,
started the same local paper, same age, same everything.
I would say he went on a more traditional career arc, which put him ahead of the game. I'm sure compensation-wise, he's far ahead of me, but I'm very happy where I am in my career right now.
I'd rather have you hosting this podcast than Rapsheet.
Thank you, Wes.
It's a good policy to destroy our guests before they even dial in.
So we're all that coming up, but before we do any of that, we check behind the glass. TD's still vacationing somewhere, so we have the great Sean Sullivan. We know him as Sully behind the glass.
Gentlemen, how's it going today?
What's up, Stash?
Not too much, yeah. I actually trimmed the stash today. It's feeling nice. I don't know if it looks as nice as it feels, but it's good.
That's why you would be eligible to marry my daughter.
Yes.
If the age range was appropriate.
Yeah, right. Such an honor.
Yes. Let's do some news, buddy. All right, we'll start with some crushing news out of Houston, where the Texans again must prepare for life without Arian Foster, who suffered a serious groin injury on Monday night's first padded practice. Info started to leak out throughout Tuesday how serious it'd be. It's going to require surgery, most likely, and also there's a very good chance he will end up on the short-term injured reserve. So this is a situation where Arian Foster, who is supposed to be the backbone of this Houston offense, is now going to be gone for not days, not weeks, but months, Chris Wessling. How devastating is this for a Texans team that needed him to be a star?
So devastating that I considered them a team with, I guess, about a 40% chance of making the playoffs. Mm. They could have gotten a wild card. Now I think it's about 2%. I don't see what their offense is now. He was their offense. We saw what happened in 2013. He went down with injury. They didn't win another game the rest of the year. This guy, to use Damashek's Jenga phrase, and Damashek always points to Arian Foster in this discussion as an underrated guy, the Texans just aren't a competitive team without him.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what they did last year, they won 9 games. And I think that sometimes Arian Foster in recent seasons, because he's had a nagging injury situation, he sometimes drives some fantasy players nuts. But what he did last season, 6 in total rushing yards, one of the most elusive running backs, according to Pro Football Focus, really ran well, I thought, on tape when he was healthy. And it's a huge loss. That's the centerpiece of their offense.
I think just as a pure runner, he was arguably the best running back in the league last year, just as a runner. I think Le'Veon Bell was probably the best overall, but just on a game-to-game basis. Used to think, oh, Gary Kubiak's system, you know, the great offensive line, you know, that's a big factor in Arian Foster. That wasn't the case last year. They had lousy quarterbacks, an uneven passing game, an uneven offensive line. The rest of the running backs there, who are not impressive, had 3.1 yards per carry. Foster's at 4.8. They have no one to replace him. Chris Polk is getting the early buzz as the most likely guy to get a chance.
Alfred Blue is there. Chris Polk. Jonathan Grimes is in the mix. They had Pierre Thomas. I don't even think Pierre Thomas made the L.A. Graybeards, and he also visited the
really?
Texans.
He did make the
Graybeards. He was on the Graybeards. You got to have Pierre.
Did he?
Yeah. Well, you didn't. And there's a reason. There's not much else out there.
Stephen Ridley and Ahmad Bradshaw were my running backs. But that's beside the point, fellas. What I'm trying to say is that Pierre Thomas visited with the Texans. It looked like they were heading toward a deal, but then they got hung up and were unable to agree on a contract. And then Rapsheet later reported that now the Texans, I guess, had some type of about-face within the organization, and they're happy with their internal options. Mm-hmm. So it looks like they believe the guys on this roster not replace Arian Foster, but at least can give some type of impact for them.
I don't believe that for a second. That sounds like PR. We couldn't agree to terms, so now we're going to pump up Jonathan Grimes, Chris Polk, and Alfred Blue. Alfred Blue averaged 3.1 yards per carry last year. He's no kind of solution for them. I don't believe that at all. I don't think they're done.
They'll sign someone. Maybe it'll be Thomas or Bradshaw after week one. Bradshaw is suspended.
Chris Johnson's out there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what every general what's out there is, like Steven Jackson's your other option. Ray Rice might be the best running back out there. He is the best running back.
Well, ESPN, he did his latest, you know, his apology tour continues. Again, apologized for his actions, said he's contrite, and said he still believes that he will be picked up and can end his career on his own terms, hang up his cleats on his own accord. So that's another option. I don't see why Ray Rice, if you can deal with that, isn't the best option out there right now.
But someone asked the question, like, they have Hard Knocks coming up. Is there going to be more resistance from a team facing that kind of media glare to bring Ray Rice in than a team that just needs a running
Absolutely.
Back?
Bob McNair has been public about the type of people he wants on his team more than just about any owner.
They don't draft people with domestic violence in their past.
Exactly. I mean, they have a pretty strict policy of staying away from guys with character issues, as they would say, and so I don't think they're going to go with Ray Rice. And you can't go with Alfred Blue, who I liked for a little bit last year, but
he's a good special teamer.
He's a guy that looks like he has all the tools. He should be a guy who's good between the tackles, but when he gets out there, not so much.
Well, he took Cleveland to town. That was probably the one game where I thought, wait a minute, they got something here. You know, one thing, though, and I understand Pierre Thomas is not going to be a three-down back for you no matter what, but this is a major hole in your offense. What was the money difference here? You've got to get someone in here. You've got to get a veteran.
Greg and I were talking about that downstairs. Did they tell him, hey, when Arian Foster gets healthy, you won't have a role here? Maybe Pierre Thomas still thinks that if he hangs up, gets hooked up with the right team, he could have a big role throughout the season. Who knows?
Maybe Thomas is debating whether he definitely wants to play for a veteran's minimum type of contract. I would have thought he would have just accepted whatever. I'd like to see Pierre Thomas back in the league.
There could be another guy injured tomorrow. He could have multiple teams bidding for his services.
Should.
Let's get caught up with the New England Patriots saga, Deflategate, of course. We'll start with the news that came out Tuesday that the NFLPA released Tom Brady's appeal testimony and court filing. People were pouring over that in all quarters of the internet. There wasn't too much juicy to take out of that, but there's some interesting things, but you know, nothing too crazy. But I think the big takeaway, Greg, at least from the last few days of news on this, is that both sides are looking to get this done ahead of week one. No matter what the outcome is, they don't want this dragging throughout the season, and that's good news for everybody, right?
Well, we should all send thanks to Judge Richard Berman out there.
Thanks, Rich Berman.
Because he's putting the feet to the fire. He's saying, first of all, you guys should settle this amongst yourselves. Keep talking. Try to figure it out. If you can't, you're going to come. Brady's going to be there. Goodell's going to be there on August 12th. We'll try to figure it out. If that doesn't happen, then you're back in our courtroom again. You guys have to be there August 19th. It's a very fast timeline, and you would think we'll have an answer, I think, weeks before the season starts. So at least we'll know what the story is, and this can finally end.
I'm so finished with this story. I'm just going to sit back and wait for Bill Simmons to launch grenades at everyone.
Bill Simmons linked to a Chris Wessling post randomly on Twitter yesterday.
Hubba hubba.
Did you know that?
I was told by you.
Well, I guess
you can do that now.
I guess the one juicy thing that I've taken out of the last couple of days, the Ravens, who, of course, I guess maybe a week ago, Sal Powell with ESPN had to come out and retract something he said on a radio show that the Baltimore Ravens owner, Steve Bisciotti, was one of these owners that would be very upset with the commissioner if this suspension were overturned or Brady was somehow exonerated. They've also denied that they tipped off the Colts on any ball deflation issues. However, the documents released on Wednesday showed that the NFL's Player Association The NFL Players Association on Tuesday included evidence that Ravens officials shared concerns with the Colts over the quality of kicking balls in January's divisional round against New England. This led the Ravens to release a statement. Prior to the AFC Championship game, no one from the Ravens talked to the Colts about deflated footballs. We knew nothing of deflated footballs. John Harbaugh has been consistent in answers to reporters about this since he was first asked on NBC TV at the Super Bowl. I ain't buying it. The Ravens have been cooking behind the scenes this whole time because they want the Pats out of the picture. The throne of ease must be taken down.
I'll give you a break.
What?
It is funny. This whole thing really seems like John Harbaugh just being like, no, we're not goobers like the Colts. Those guys are the bad guys. Like, we're cool. Like, you know, like, I think he has a relationship with Belichick.
He does. They're friends.
And that's his thing.
Belichick was a
mentor. That's right.
Belichick was a mentor to John Harbaugh.
Yep.
Hey, it's still the throne of ease, because which team would you rather be? Would you rather be the Patriots, or would you rather be Ryan Grigson knocking on the door of the NFL with 6 minutes left in the first half going, hey, guys, we got a small ball. we've got a small ball. That was the quote from the transcript.
Ball?
He's like, we've got a small ball on the field. That was the quote. He gave to Troy Vincent.
That was very Joffrey-esque right there by Greg, just standing up, giving his throne of each speech
Cherubic
over the entire
angels
countryside.
Dropping grapes in Greg's mouth as he was making his points.
It's been a wild
this harp thing, being strummed.
This thing needs to end. I mean, on the same day that the judge was begging for them to come to terms, the Patriots were releasing emails that they had sent to Jeff Pasch of the NFL on their old Wells Report website. That are pretty insane, you know, negative emails towards the end. I mean, it hasn't really slowed down from the Patriots side at all.
From another angle, email wise, Tom Brady, sort of a jerk. Like, if you go read these emails that got captured, he's like some rant about what color pool cover he should have.
That was funny.
You've got to go get this other guy to get the right cover. And on he's firing off emails to clothing designers asking for free
threads. Stuff.
They're Mark's takeaways about the pool designer.
The pool cover is notable, Mark. He asked for a white cover for the wintertime when the snow came falling down on Giselle Manor. And when he found out that only black was available, he said, what kind of idiots don't have a white pool cover? You know, come back to reality, Tommy boy.
What?
This is all stuff in the documents.
Wait, you know, everyone's got a boss. His boss is Giselle. He knows there's going to be that white snow cover.
Right, it feels Giselle generated.
Oh, like you guys don't know everyone gets the white pool snow cover for the winter.
Yeah, it seems like you just sit down and have a beer with Tom Brady and he'd be perfectly normal. Can talk about white pool covers.
All right, that's it. Because that sound you hear is Wes biting his tongue on this whole topic. He wants to go nuts.
I do, but I mean, what can I say that hasn't already
nuts
been
enough.
Said?
Hey, you're a hero to the fans in New England.
Yeah, congrats
I'm not
on
even
that.
A Patriots fan, but come on, this story has been. I love. I'm
Greg,
biting my tongue.
I've gotten a lot of Twitter being like, "Oh, Chris Wessling, that's the real Patriots fan. This other guy, Rosenthal, he doesn't even speak up for them." There's been a lot of that on Twitter.
Chris Wessling, leader of Patriots Nation.
I am not a Patriots fan.
Has a mini mansion on Patriot Way.
I just can't deal with farces when they're so obvious.
Fair enough. All right, moving on. The Jaguars, of course, used to have a great up-and-coming star receiver. His name was Justin Blackmon. Of course, he's had substance abuse issues that have taken him off the field. He hasn't appeared in a game or Jaguars practice since midway through the 2013 season. And on Wednesday, Jags general manager Dave Caldwell spoke out and made it sound like he doesn't think Blackmon will ever play again. Here's the quote, "I have not heard anything, and I guess I harbor a little bit of hope, but realistically, I think when you're away from the game for 2.5 years, what you were once is not what you will probably be. Your skills do erode, and especially if you're not staying in tip-top shape and you're not in football shape." So making it very clear, Caldwell, is that you're not going to see Justin Blackmon in a Jags uniform, and maybe not any uniform. It could be over. Your thoughts, guys?
I don't think it's easy to come back from the kind of break he's had to begin with, unless what he's been doing while away is preparing to play football again. And the indication is that that's maybe not happening with him. You forget how good he was in 2013 when he came back from suspension. This was a team that needs playmakers so much. For them to lose a guy like Blackmon, who really was coming on, I mean, you just can't replace him.
Sometimes I get annoyed by, you know, players that are analysts, and they kind of go on Mount Pius a little bit and say, you don't know what it's like. You weren't a player. But this is one time where I feel a little bit of a disconnect. If a GM says that if you're away from the game that long, you literally can't get your skills back, I take their word for it a little bit, although it seems strange to me. You wouldn't think that the skills would be gone as long as you stay in shape and then eventually get your act together. But it sounds like there is an actual depreciation in talent.
Well, that's a big if, though, getting your act together. And the issues that I think he's dealing with are significant off the field. And they probably have a little more information on that than maybe they're letting on. You know, I mean,
I found it odd, though, that he specifically didn't speak to the substance abuse issues. He said physically it's been too long for him to come back.
Well, if we heard anything where Justin Blackman's come out and said, listen, I am so driven to return to the NFL, there's never been that story.
What a cursed position that is for the Jaguars. I mean, they have a good-looking group here with Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns, although Mark Easley's hurt right now. But just think about Matt Jones, Reggie Williams. They had Mike Walker at one point. I don't remember.
Mike Sims Walker, yeah.
Connor Orr did a nice movie. You know, the reason the Jags have been bad for so long now is they keep whiffing on first-round picks. And these are some top 30 picks since 2003. Byron Leftwich, Reggie Williams, Matt Jones, Mercedes Lewis, Reggie Nelson, Derek Harvey, Eugene Monroe, Tyson Alau, Blaine Gabbert, and Justin Blackmon. How many of those guys are real players? They were all supposed to be stars.
Well, they came before the current regime to some degree. So, I mean, that's you know, there was a lot of GMing in Jacksonville that had a lot of people concerned for a long time. I think the new regime, and I know, you know, I made David Caldwell a Making the Leap candidate. They did not do that last year, and they'd better do it this year or everything could be gone in Jacksonville. But when you lose a guy like Blackmon, the same thing happened with Josh Gordon in Cleveland. You go from two foundation pieces in 2013 to having to restart on offense.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. Last word.
Didn't get a chance to answer your question.
Oh, please.
I mean, you threw it out there, but I do think.
What, the name of the girl you're dating?
No.
Oh, okay.
That wasn't even.
What was the question?
About saying that this guy couldn't get back, couldn't recapture his form after a couple years away. I think people underestimate that you're playing at the highest level of the game, and you've heard players say before there's a difference between football shape and in being in shape, and I think you have to hone those skills. It's not just being in shape. You have to hone those skills on a daily basis against competition.
All right, so we'll see what happens with Mr. Blackmon. That is what's happening in the news. On the phone right now, the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys,
woo!
Yes, the great Tony Romo. Welcome to the Around the NFL podcast, Tony. Glad to have you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right.
Good to be on.
Tony's here on behalf of DirecTV, and you know, we'll get to a little bit more about DirecTV later. But for start, we got to talk about the season, training camp getting going. Time flies. Tony Romo, 13 seasons now this year. He turned 35 in April. Tony, you're still playing at an elite level. You got a big-time team around you. Came close last year. Continuity at the coaching staff. Everything is in line for you guys to put it together this year. But at the same time, there's some pressure involved, right? Especially maybe now compared to, say, 5 years ago, right?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I think every year is kind of the same expectations from the outside. You know, some years you're supposed to be really good. Other years you're not supposed to be good. But, you know, you don't let that external stuff really creep in your mind. You just go out and do what you're supposed to do and be the best version of yourself and perfect your craft along the way. And I think our team just doesn't get into what, you know, these external pressures and what they are. We try and just get rid of that stuff and go play and do good.
Is that something you've learned over your career? Because I'm thinking back to the 2007, 2008 teams. You know, there's a lot of hype around those teams. Do you think that, you know, affected you guys negatively and you somehow handle that differently now?
I wouldn't. I mean, there's only probably two of us left from then, so I'm not really sure. You know, that would apply to the football team. These guys don't even know about those years. So in some ways, personally, I think you do learn through experience. But even back then, I think I knew that it was always about just improving and getting better and continually, you know, if we didn't get the job done, everyone's got to look at themselves and say, I wasn't good enough and just figure out how to get better for the next time. And then you go draft some good players, you go get some good talent and coaches coach and guys get better as they're here for a few years. And before you know it, you got a good football team, and you got to try and do that over and over again.
So DeMarco Murray, Tony, is out of the picture now. And, you know, you obviously have a great offensive line. A lot of people think it's the best in the league. But admit, you're a little bit worried about the running back situation, just a little bit, with the offensive player of the year out the door and maybe not a ready-made guy stepping in the view of people, at least outside the organization. A little bit.
Yeah, I think, DeMarco obviously had an incredible season last year, and he's one of my good friends, and so the business side of it, when that takes place, it's never enjoyable to watch, you know, something like that happen. You know, at the same time, it's an opportunity for some of these other guys to step in and take a role that's, you know, obviously coveted. And I think so far through training camp, it's gone pretty well. These guys have stepped up and shown some flashes that we're pretty excited about. And now they got to just take it and run with it, and we'll find out through training camp and the preseason how good they really are. But you got to give them an opportunity to see.
Tony, you were in the MVP discussion last year, and I think a lot of people attribute that you had a better year because of DeMarco's success and his heavy workload. It took some pressure off of you. What is your reaction to that kind of, I guess, analysis that you owed a lot of your success to your running back?
Oh, I owe a lot of my success to a lot of people. I owe it to Jason Witten, DeMarco, Dez, our offensive line, our coaches. you know, calling the right plays, the right situations, putting us in a position, and then through experience and the levels, I'm able to get us in and out of bad plays and the better ones. And I get a lot of trust from my coaching staff to do a lot of things on the football field that allow us to change and get in and out of plays. And I do that probably a lot more than you guys see, but that comes through a lot of other people allowing that, and then other guys having the ability to go make plays versus their opponents. So I don't ever think anybody's success is just themselves in the NFL. It's a team sport, and we all need each other. And I think that anytime you have good people around you, it makes you look better.
Do you think being the Dallas Cowboys quarterback is different than being other teams' quarterbacks? Like, do you ever kind of look at what's going on, let's say, in Atlanta, great quarterback in Matt Ryan, and just, you know, they're just kind of slipping under the radar. No one's really, like, kind of paying attention, whereas you're coming out to California. It's a whole production. Every press conference is a production. Everything your owner says makes national news. Do you ever think that your job is inherently different than other quarterbacks out there?
You know, I honestly don't. I don't know. It's a good question. It's just I've never been anywhere but Dallas, so it's kind of I'd be speculating. I do know that each one of those teams feels the same from their local fan base about the passions about winning, and you know that's just part of playing in the National Football League. You know, so to me, it's not a whole lot different. But I guess you'd have to ask them.
You know, you've been in OTAs, you've been in training camp for better part of this week. Is there a player outside of the Joseph Randle who everyone's talking about, a young guy that no one is talking about today, but we will be a month from now on offense or defense?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think right now we're just getting started. It's most of the same names you've seen. I think some of the young guys are just trying to figure the offense out. I mean, it takes time to play really fast and learn the system. And, you know, you have to see. I mean, obviously, Joseph Randle and Lance Dunbar, these guys have done a good job taking advantage of the reps they've had at the running back position so far. We're excited about them. But the other guys are a little bit younger. You know, Darren hasn't gotten a lot of reps because he's been banged up a little bit. So we'll see as that moves on. But, you know, it's just part of training camp. We've got to go figure that stuff out.
Have you, now that you've had, you know, the two back surgeries, have you changed any of your, let's call it like internal hardwiring in terms of how you operate in the pocket, when to flee? When you take off with the ball and run, is there a part of you that gets scared that you could hurt that back again and maybe it could all go out the window at any moment?
I don't think you can play that way. I think when you get on the field, you just got to instinctively do what, through repetition and experience, you know, gives you the best opportunity to succeed. There's obviously times where you don't need to take unnecessary hits, but for the most part, you got to do what you got to do to win football games. You know, I try and do that each day and make the same decision I'd make in a game.
And okay, so you are now, you know, you always know right around this time of your commercials start airing and you see it and then you're like, oh, I'm going to have to watch this commercial roughly 7 million times over the course of the NFL season. In the case of these DirecTV commercials, it's pretty good though because they obviously – there's some good production work, some good premises. Tony Romo has a great new DirecTV commercial for Sunday Ticket. The name of the character, and Tony, you can let us know if you had anything to do with this creatively, the background. Arts and Crafts Tony Romo. The feature is gems like this.
I mixed a cupcake and a brownie. I'm calling it a crownie.
I mean, that is good stuff. So, first of all, Tony, take us through this character, and did you have anything to do with coming up with it? And how did you like doing, you know, Arts and Crafts Tony Romo?
It was great. It was definitely a unique experience. I hadn't sat in a makeup chair for 4 hours before, but
oh my God.
Yeah, it was a little different. I think they had the plan for the situation, and obviously I agreed to it, and then when I was in there, though, they had a certain way, I think that they wanted me to just to be a little bit less, probably, than what you saw, but I ended up feeling as though this guy, like, lives by himself, and he's never seen, like, he doesn't interact with human beings very often. I felt like, okay, there's, like, the camera crew in this guy's house, and now he's really excited to show, but he's a little weirded out by everybody, and so... It just kind of felt that way when I was on set, so I kind of just took on that role a little bit, and then it kind of made it into what it is. And Arts and Craftsy became a little paranoid Arts and Craftsy, so it's pretty good.
So you went full method. You're like Robert De Niro. You create a whole, you know, character sketch and a story to get you in the mind frame before you go.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like Robert De Niro.
It kind of was. It was like
I hear a little Paul Rudd.
I'm sure my Academy Awards are right around the corner here anytime now.
I would, if someone asked me to describe it, it would be like Bob Vila meets Bob Ross, and then just a lot of sadness and loneliness.
That's a good description.
That's pretty good.
But I am excited, and we're going to let you go in a second, Tony, that you have the NFC East is going to be obviously wide open again this year. But the biggest, to me, battle right now is arts and crafts Tony Romo and bad comedian Eli Manning on the commercial front.
That's so, a good one.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is before you guys let me go, when I was younger, I used to want to watch our NFC East opponents. And I never had actually, DirecTV, this NFL Sunday ticket. And I would literally go there, get excited about our bye weekend, or we play a Thursday game, be like, we're going to watch Eli, or we're going to watch the Eagles or the Redskins or whoever. And then I get on there and they put on whoever. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And I would be so upset.
Matt Schaub again. No.
And then it was like, you know what? You got this Sunday ticket thing. You can watch every single game, live, and then watch every minute of it. It's like, this is crazy. I mean, how does everybody not have, this deal? My uncle literally orders the Max deal, and he gets to watch it streams on his phone. He watches it, like, he goes out to the grocery store and watches the game. Like, that's so different than it was 5 years ago. So I want to thank DirecTV and Sunday Ticket for that. It's made it a lot better for our bye weekends.
It definitely has. It's a lot different than a sports experience now. Tony Romo, good luck in the upcoming season, and thank you for joining us on the Around the NFL podcast.
You got it. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, there's Tony Romo, big star in the podcast. Right near the top, by the way, of like the biggest stars we've had on the show. Jim Brown's like, what about me, Mark?
Richard Sherman.
Richard Sherman's going to tweet about
that. That was pre Around the NFL podcast.
Jeff Darlington.
We did have Jeff Darlington.
He was in the show.
Ian Rappaport, one of the great stars of the universe. So all different things going on. But it was very nice to have Tony Romo on the line. And I will say this. Tony Romo's going to Romo. And he knows how to speak as a professional jock speak. You ask him if he's feeling extra pressure. He says, no, every year is a new year, blah, blah, blah. But it really, with all due respect, there is more pressure on Tony Romo this year. And I'll go as far as saying that no veteran quarterback is under more pressure than Tony Romo is this year, with the back injuries and the fact that he's 35 and the fact that the window seems open after a very promising return to competitiveness last year for Dallas. You never know how long this stuff will last. But this year, this team is lined up to go deep into the playoffs again. And if you don't do it, and you're another year older, or your back starts hurting a little more, you never know what happens. So Tony Romo would be my pick if I were to say who's under more pressure than anybody. So I'm curious what you guys think. If you want to throw out, I know you probably all agree with me, Tony Romo, most pressure, nailed it, Dan.
We do, again. Segment over. Segment.
Yeah, but just for the for the sake of the listeners and drawing out the show a little bit, tell me, guys, who you think is another veteran quarterback under a lot of pressure this year. I'll start with you, Sizzler.
I think it's easy. I mean, yes, Romo's playoff window and Super Bowl window is closing, but Peyton Manning's this really figures to be his final season. I mean, if he goes beyond this year, I'd be surprised personally. I think the team is gearing up for potentially Brock Osweiler taking over at some point, and they brought in a whole new offensive system that's going to put more emphasis on the ground game, take a little bit off Manning. We're not going to see anything close to the number of attempts from last season. The guy has a great roster around him. It's on Peyton Manning to get it done. He's not done it yet. That's the only reason they brought him there. And after what we saw at the end of last season, I think there's a lot of questions we have going into the preseason. What kind of arm does he have? What does he look like physically? A lot of pressure.
He puts the pressure on himself, but that talent around him that you mentioned is why I don't think he makes sense as the choice here, because I think he's in a situation where he doesn't need to be what Peyton Manning used to be. That roster's awesome. Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, a defense that was as good and as talented as any in the league last year for most of it, and then they add some piece with Shane Ray. I mean, they lost some pieces this year, but I think he can go out there and kind of does what he does, and they're going to win games for him a little bit like the Cowboys and Tony Romo.
Right, but if they don't win the Super Bowl, it's a colossal failure.
He's got a ton of pressure. I totally agree. If they don't win this, they're in their Super Bowl window now, and you're right. This might be Peyton Manning's last year. Not only for the Broncos that they're putting all their eggs in his basket. I mean, they're planning for life after him, but that doesn't mean they're going to be a Super Bowl team. But also, does Peyton Manning want to be regarded as the best quarterback of all time? You need another Super Bowl.
Well, he's one of the only quarterbacks I think you can say definitively he cares about stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely.
He knows the view of him because he has one Super Bowl.
And his brother has two.
Right. And not, I mean, one Super Bowl is great. I mean, that's the thing. It's like it'd be even more pressure if he had none. But considering how many games he's won in his career and how good his teams have been, you would think he would have more than one.
Chris Wessling, who's your pick?
Well, Peyton Manning has 9 1-and-dones in the NFL playoffs, which is more than double any other quarterback in history. Second place is a guy who's been in the league for 4 years. 4 1-and-dones.
Wait, I think I know where this is going.
Andy Dalton. Look, they've got their best offense possibly in team history. Maybe going back to 1988, Jeremy Hill led the NFL in rushing and yards per carry in the second half of last season. A.J. Green is somehow no longer considered a top five wide receiver, which is ridiculous. He is. They've got Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert back from injuries. Giovanni Bernard is one of the best passing down backs in the NFL. This offense is absolutely loaded. And then you've got everybody singing Geno Atkins praises in camp. If this guy is what he was in 2012, the Bengals should be a Super Bowl contender. Marvin Lewis is even talking about Super Bowls now. Andy Dalton has to win, or else why not try? I mean, it's the Bengals, so you never know. They don't like making moves, but you would think his job would be on the line.
Well, the most talented Bengals offense in history, I mean, Boomer Esiason just threw up a little bit in his mouth, you know? Right on Craig Carton or something. And you know who else did? Like a 20-year-old Chris Wessling or 16-year-old. How dare you say a team.
I believe.
You know, let's see it. Well, put it all together.
Where he's right, though, is that every other quarterback we're going to bring up, no one's going to say they'll win despite this guy. They're going to win because of Tony Romo and because of Peyton Manning. But this is a guy that's hanging out as an NFL starter on a playoff-caliber team, viewed as the reason that they can't get to the next level. That's not a good place to be, because they're going to want change, even though as resistant as they are to that in Cincinnati, they're going to demand it at some point.
I would argue playing in Cincinnati, that makes less pressure. Playing for the Bengals.
Yes.
Because they are just okay with quarterback mediocrity.
And
that
coaching mediocrity.
That takes some pressure off.
I'll bite Wes, because you did mention it, that people are saying AJ Green not in the top five. Throw out Beckham, Megatron, Dez Bryant, Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, maybe Demaryius Thomas.
Terrell Pryor, Dan.
Terrell Pryor.
Well,
you think he's ahead of? You know, is he?
You can't talk about the top receivers in the NFL without mentioning AJ Green, and people have started to do that just because of one season where he's playing through a bad injury for most of the year. I just think it's irresponsible.
So who does he get out of your top five?
Well, you go top eight.
Well, he's top five, you got to get the other people out. You
can't just go top eight. I think it's weird to artificially cut it off at five.
Well, you said five. It was going off you.
Well, I think when you have the discussion, his name should be in there.
Mm. Okay.
Do you have Jordy?
Let's have one of those.
I don't have Jordy, but I could throw him in there too.
He belongs in there. All those guys belong.
Well, top eight is a different conversation.
I think Hansis just did a debate suplex on Wesson. He doesn't know what to do.
Doesn't happen often.
I could rank them for you, but then people care more about the number than the analysis, and I don't like that.
That's AJ Green in the top five.
He belongs in the discussion as one of the top five receivers. There's very little separation between all of them.
Van shoots by and kidnaps Julio Jones from Falcons practice. A.J. Green gets in the top five.
I'm putting him in the top five, by the way, anyways.
A.J. Green is an absolute stud.
I mean, I don't disagree.
People have very short memories. It's all about what you did lately.
Well, but it's about who you pull out of that list, though.
I'm taking out Jordy, Demaryius, and Beckham. Sorry.
Now, that's a different conversation.
That's going to look bad for you very shortly.
Just saying right now.
Greg, you give us veteran quarterback under pressure for you.
How about Philip Rivers? You know, everyone talks about you know, Tony Romo. Of course, he's been one of the best quarterbacks of the last 10 to 12 years. Oh, he's got to get it. He got to get his title now. He's getting old, 35. Like, you know, he's been underrated. So, Philip Rivers, everyone loves him, and yet it's almost like no one has expectation. No one says Philip Rivers hasn't been able to get to the Super Bowl. Quarterback that good. And I don't think it's Philip Rivers' fault. It's the team around him. But that's the same thing with Romo. He's running out of years. He's also in a contract year where there's some pressure between him and the organization. There's the whole San Diego.
There's no pressure there. They want to pay him. He won't take their money. That's not pressure.
Well, that's stressful.
That's not pressure.
He's wanting one big payday before he retires.
He's going to get it no matter what.
His 15 children. You can't say that. What if he gets hurt?
Well, wait. Any guy with – he has eight children or eight on the way, the eighth. That is a man under pressure.
Exactly.
What if he gets hurt? He played a playoff game with a torn ACL. There's nothing stopping him.
I mean, I don't.
By the way, there's no pressure for a guy worth like $97 million.
Well, that's half our, that's our entire list.
Well, you don't become Philip Rivers and put on that bolo tie without a desire to be great and a desire to win.
It's like Tony Romo telling us he couldn't afford Sunday ticket 4 years ago.
I don't know if I bought that.
I don't buy that.
He's been playing great, and these Philip Rivers teams the last 4 years have been mediocre, and he's running out of time. He wants to win a Super Bowl.
The real pressure is the Hall of Fame discussion. There are people who believe Eli Manning's been a – I mean, there are some deluded people who believe that Eli Manning has been a better quarterback throughout his career than Philip Rivers.
That's what I mean. But Rivers doesn't you see, think he is a guy that is burning to do more than that Chargers team has been able to do for the
absolutely.
Last 4 years.
The pressure's on the Chargers, not Philip Rivers.
All right.
I remember those rough and tumble days for Tony Romo where when he didn't know where his next meal was coming, like 2012 or whatever. If only we knew, we could have maybe started a Kickstarter. Got him that Sunday ticket. But now he's okay. His uncle.
You know, though, he kept his problems internal. I like that. Yeah. That's what a good quarterback does.
Just eating ramen noodles every day before Cowboys practice.
Spent it all on that trip with Jason Witten and Dan Campbell. Those tips don't
bring up Jason Witten with Sully behind the glass, by the way. Straight up some creepy stuff about going to Mexico on a vacation because he went to the same college.
Yeah, no, he's a VFL. I wouldn't mind sitting on the beach drinking some pina coladas with Jason Witten. That'd be kind of fun.
All right. You know what? Probably would be fun.
Yeah.
As long as it stayed there, you know?
Yeah, no, obviously. I mean, come on now. He could tell me about his catch in overtime to beat Arkansas.
I feel
day.
Like we
I'd
need
happy.
This photoshopped by a listener.
All right. So these are the quarterback. Yes. If anybody could do that, please. And also, if you can find the Delaware tapes, that'd be good. So Tony Romo. These are the quarterbacks under the pressure. Tony Romo.
Wait, there's no. How do well, we not settle in order. This debate anyways?
Tony Romo.
That's right.
I mixed a cupcake and a brownie. I'm calling it a crownie.
I'm just going over this so I could have gotten that drop in one more time. Mark, you had
Peyton Manning.
That I don't know who that is.
Is Sully about to tee up like the chicken parm drop?
Yeah, Wes, you had
Andy Dalton.
Maybe Rocky Top, but not chicken.
And Mark, you had Phil Rivers. So hey, listen, QBs, QB1s. Pressure's on, boys.
I'm throwing in one more quick one, too. Colin Kaepernick. Oh. He's on a year-to-year contract. That whole team could be changing if things don't go well. And it's like, who is Colin Kaepernick? Is he going to be a great guy or what?
Is this an existential question?
Is he going to be
– Who is Colin Kaepernick?
Yeah. Is he just some guy, or is he going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league we all thought he was going to be?
I'm with you, because if he regresses again or remains just, you know, at this level, he's jag.
Well, people are going to look back outside of Russell Wilson on that – like whole read option quarterback phenomenon be like, don't think so.
All right. So there you go. That's that. All right. Here we go. Next up on the line, big phone call day. I feel like we're on the fan or something. Next up on the line, the hotline, the Mark Sessler hotline, NFL media insider, Ian Rappaport on the horn. He's all over America, but right now he's on the cell phone. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, guys? How are you?
Putting the hot in hotline. A lot of people actually have called you a younger Tony Romo. Well, I guess you're not even younger, but you kind of look like Tony Romo, people say.
I'm a little older. I'm a little shorter. Yeah, I would say probably about every day or every day during the season, somebody will say, did anyone tell you you look like Tony Romo? And I always have the same response. Yes, until I stand up. And then you're like, oh, you're not the quarterback for the Cowboys. Gotcha.
It must be a decent bit. It must get a good response then, right?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, you know, we're sort of in reruns now since I've used it so often, but I just haven't found a line that can compare to that.
Yeah.
And I can't, you know, it's tough to, you can't really laugh about anything Romo's done anymore because he's played so well and, like, in big games, there's just nothing that funny about Romo anymore. So I just go to my stock line and, you know, hopefully have a fairly ignorant audience that will give a little laugh.
And just, it slays. All right,
classics always get heavy play.
Ian is our NFL media insider, and contractually we must say that at least seven times every show. And you've been around the country so far, seven stops, correct me if I'm wrong, Denver, Oakland, Indy, or not the cities, but the teams, Colts, Cowboys, Redskins, Browns, and Niners. So Ian has been a busy man earning his paycheck.
Yeah, and I did stopped off at the random laundromat in Anderson, Indiana, did laundry, which is always a sign that you're on the road for a long time.
Wait, media insiders don't get laundry done for them?
I had the opportunity to give it to the hotel and let them do it. But, you know, Dan, I'm like a man of the people, right?
All right.
So, you know, you haven't lived until you've gone to a random laundromat in a place you've never been and just been like, here, person I've never met before, just handle all my clothes. I trust you with that. And at the end, I'll pay you $10.
Oh, so you weren't like sitting there with Star Magazine as your clothes were in the background. You gave it to some random jabroni to handle it for
you. Well, those NFL Network polos need special care.
Quarters and Entertainment Weekly or whatever. No.
Okay, I got you. All right, let's talk a little bit about what's going on at these camps. Mark Sessler, get us going.
All right, you're in Denver, and I think the thing that a lot of us want to know about this Broncos team is, you were there firsthand. What does Manning's arm look like? How does he seem physically? It feels like the whole Denver season hinges on that.
Well, it's funny you asked, because I have no idea. The day I went, it was one of the strangest sights I've ever seen at on a Peyton Manning team ever. And it's because he didn't practice. And believe me, I've gone to all these places, and all the coaches that I talked to ask where I've been, and everyone has asked me about Manning not practicing because it's so weird. Ben takes a day off in Pittsburgh and nobody cares. Peyton takes a day off and everyone's like, it's just odd.
Brock Osweiler has tears streaming down his face when this happens.
Yeah. It was a big day for us. And I kind of like how they do it there. Like, they basically told him, like, act like you're the starter today. Just, it's your team today. And you can sort of, you see how ready a guy is, but the reality is, while Peyton wants to win this year, this certainly might be his last year, and the Broncos need to know what they have in Brock Osweiler. They'd like to give him a contract extension, but how much do you actually pay a guy that you haven't seen? It's like it's a real evaluation issue, and so they're trying to see him, trying to make sure he's ready, and just means Peyton's not on the field all the time, which is rare for him.
Ian, you've reported in the past how much the Broncos, how high they are on Brock Osweiler. Do you think, if you had to say today, will he be starting next year?
I would say I think there's a really good chance he's starting next year based on what the organization thinks of him, the kind of work they've put into him, and, obviously Peyton Manning's future kind of plays into that, but there's one thing that's pretty clear about the organization. I mean, there's this year, but there is absolutely a preparation for years, for the next couple of years. And the worst thing ever is to go into a season just without a quarterback, go into an offseason without a quarterback. They have one. They're pretty comfortable with it. They got a good team around them. So I would say there's a pretty good chance he's the guy next year. But obviously, what if Peyton decides that he wants to be the guy still? It's a bit complicated offseason for the Broncos.
Well, they were ready to move on from him, and I think that gets lost a little bit. They were ready to move on from him this offseason. You've reported, certain aspects of, what they asked for, taking a pay cut.
Like, $10 million.
Like, how do you – like, do you think just from what you've heard behind the scenes that was something they were absolutely ready to do, was just hand the keys over this year?
The best way it was explained to me was, if you ask a guy to take a pay cut, $1, let alone $10 million, you have to be ready for the possibility that he's going to say, go shove it, or however you would describe it.
Go shove it, man.
Go shove it, John Elway.
Stick it up your These are all options of what you could do. Go ahead, Ian.
We're allowed to say that on the podcast?
Oh, yeah.
That might get beeped. Who knows? But it's your time, Ian. Say whatever you want.
But, really though, like, when you ask a guy to take a pay cut, there's always a chance that he says, no way. So anytime you do that, you have to be ready for the option. I mean, I don't know if it would have been Brock Osweiler. I mean, that's, Kubiak he's been very successful with a quarterback who I know Greg has strong feelings for, and Schaub, who has not been successful anywhere else. So he can make it happen with different guys. I would say that was definitely an option internally, and if Peyton Manning turned them down outright.
Hey, Ian, I know how high you are on Amari Cooper. You've seen some other rookies. Has anyone stood out? Like, I'm thinking, is Philip Dorsett, does he look any better than some of the other young receivers the Colts have?
Amari Cooper is definitely the one who stands out. Like, if there's going to be a Sammy Watkins of this year, you know, in other words, a guy who just shows up, right, like, just ready to be an NFL player, I think Amari Cooper is it. But I was just in Anderson with the Colts. They could not be higher on Philip Dorsett. And it was a weird pick, and I think everybody was surprised. Everyone thought they would go defense or offensive line. But, you know, I asked a coach yesterday, I was like, you know, were you surprised you didn't go defense in the first round? And it was, well, no, this guy's that good. I mean, they basically feel like he's DeSean Jackson when he came out. But how do I say this? A little more put together
mentally?
On and off the field.
Mm. You can just say it. You know, you just did say it. You basically threw DeSean under the bus. Can we make that the headline? Rap sheet, colon, DeSean Jackson is a crazy person.
Well, I would say no. But I also, like, just as far as speed, DeSean Jackson has had some ridiculous seasons and contributions. So they think this guy is that. Mm. Plus, again, much more put together, takes care of his business. So I think they think, you know, they just added a superstar. Hmm.
Well, I mean, let's talk about DeSean Jackson's quarterback in Washington. There's a lot of bizarre whispers coming out about what's going on with Gruden, the ownership, and everything over RG3. What are you hearing? What is the real deal with RG3? Because whenever I hear any optimism from Gruden on RG3, my inclination is not to believe a word of it.
Well, I mean, I would sort of wish everybody would stop talking about, I mean, obviously as a reporter, you want everyone to do every interview, but I kind of wish everybody would stop talking about it because I'm not sure the words really mean much. He's making progress. He's buying in. He's adapting to the system. You know,
it's not about the grind. It's about the find.
I don't think anyone said that, have they?
RG3 said that.
I'll send you the link. It's amazing.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
The reality is they're going to do everything they can this year to make sure that he doesn't have to win it. And you can read into that however you want. But he can be a successful quarterback in the NFL not doing everything like he did as a rookie, because physically they're not sure he's there at this point or maybe ever. So, but you know, he can distribute the ball. He can still be really successful.
And he's.
I think the player that we saw as a rookie is one we may never see again.
He seems to be on board with this. Of course, it's RG3, so he always kind of puts his foot in his mouth. He said on Friday that they don't want me to be Superman. They just want me to be ordinary. So that's what I'll be. So, like, you know,
He's actually not wrong. That is kind of what they want.
Right. That's what I mean. It's like if you want to read into a certain way, it's like, oh, he's saying something again that kind of makes it look like the team and player aren't on the same page. But
a little past, it sounds.
It sounds that way. It reads that way. But if you look at the actual words and what he's saying, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it comes, you know, it's a little off-putting. You kind of be like, oh, really? But that is exactly right.
Do you buy that McGlewin, Snyder, and the ownership are on the same page, like in everything? And do you think that is potentially combustible again? Because it basically happens every year.
I think that they are all on the same page. I don't know if they're all on the same page with the quarterback, because if he can't play, then I think they'll just move accordingly. But I really think that Gruden and McLuhan are, you know, because all he's done is, I mean, it was a very un-Redskins-like, you know, very un-Redskins-like offseason. They didn't spend a ton of money. They got a bunch of mid-level free agents that make a lot of sense, like, you know, Ricky Jean-Francois and, you know, guys like that, Pot Roast. You know, so it just made a lot of sense. They took a guy in the first round who might start at right tackle or guard for them, and it was a great pick. So I think they've at the least, they've given Gruden better personnel to try to win with, at the least.
All right. So, Ian, I was told, I heard through the grapevine that you might have some beef or there's some heat to throw around right now. Do you have any flame throwing to do?
I don't
I wouldn't say that. I don't think there's
any
flamethrowing.
You were taking some shots at one of our hosts.
No. Look, appearance. A lot of people have gray hair. I don't think it's flamethrowing at all. No, it's not. It's not. There's been, you know, Jay Leno was very successful.
Right.
But you brought it up on...
Similar haircut.
You know, you brought it up, you know, you just brought
it up. Yeah, I mean, it's just weird that a guy's that gray that young, but look, a lot of...
It, I mean, you know, I find it strange that every time I see Ian on TV, it's like the Exxon Valdez tragedy. His hair gets darker and darker, and I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if it's maybe we have a little...
I will say this.
Maybe you have the same type of genes as Gary Kubiak, but who knows if that's natural. You know, I'm just saying, we are the same age, Ian, you and I, and let's keep it real. Your hair, it doesn't necessarily look natural anymore.
No, it is not... Not only is it natural, it is all natural.
Wow.
And, you know, it's been the Tom Brady situation and waiting around for that for 2 weeks prevented me from getting a haircut.
Okay.
before inside training camp started. So I have a little too much hair at this point. And I will say this, gotten a lot of compliments on the hair in it, on ITC. So.
Yeah, I don't know.
Got to go with that.
I wouldn't call it your best attribute.
No, it's true. And I think
hair
for
heat.
You. For you, and I don't want to be like, you know, last thing I want to do is be rude about it.
Just so you know, I'm barely listening at this point.
You should look into something, you know, doing something about it.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Wow. Coming at Dan about his hair is pretty much the thing that hurts him the most. Like, you could talk about his family or his work performance. That'd be fine. But his hair, that's off limits.
He's basically like the boss in Mad Men. Just like, basically white.
No, it's actually, it's the opposite of that, Greg, because it's the one thing where I have such confidence that it's impenetrable. There's nothing that could rock me. Finally, Ian, I could hang up on you for your malfeasance right now, but I won't. I will say that you tweeted about some music you've been listening to on the road. And I wanted to play that Biggie Smalls song that you tweeted about, I Got a Story to Tell, which I think is about John Starks, but I couldn't even play a clip of it because it's one of the more filthy songs. It has to be in his catalog.
Is it about Starks? People were asking me.
It's about a Nick.
Which Nick?
In Infidelity. And I know there are some rumors it was Johnny Starks, and it led to his 2-for-18 in 94 against the Rockets in Game 7. But what I can play, allegedly, I can play a Ghostface Killah song. That you were vouching for, Sully. Maybe you'll find and this, I can get behind this. I remember this one. This is more for, as much for a rap sheet, getting his personality out there. He's not just an information man, but also for Wes.
I like this song.
Yeah, this is one of the franchise stars of the Wu-Tang Clan, of course, Ghostface Killah. What's the name of the song?
Dear Sheila Ghost.
Yeah. So this gets you through the long bus rides across America.
That's Ian's intro song.
One of the best things I did was, I don't know how to, this is really embarrassing, but I don't know how to put songs on an iPod. and so I asked my wife, I made a list of 75 songs. I found an iPod shuffle. I was like, can you just put all of my songs on this? So when I have no internet on flights, when you go from like Chicago to Cleveland, you can listen to your jams.
Yeah, you just throw Fish Scale on by Ghostface. You can let that whole thing just go. That'll get you going.
I have to buy the album, though.
Yeah, whatever. Support the artists.
This will be all part of our Wu-Tang and its Satellites podcast coming up after the Chris Wessling Theology podcast and the Chris Wessling is Dating podcast. There's a lot of stuff. We have a whole network. And if anyone's listening on Sirius XM NFL Radio, we can have an entire channel at this point. Ian Rappaport, thank you for joining us. And, you know, we'll see you down the line, hopefully not too long from now, buddy. And you know what? I know what's going on with your hair.
I will never get these minutes back.
I know what's going on with your hair, and I know the secrets.
Neither were our listeners. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
Bye, guys.
All right. Ian Rappaport, our NFL media insider. And, yes, that's the truth, Greg. Like, I have no problem with any comments about gray in my hair. I am confident that the look is working.
I get that.
I'm not confident about everything about myself physically, but my hair?
No, that makes
a lot of women like salt and pepper.
Exactly.
Well, or at least they say that.
Plus, you know, one of your heroes in life, Keith Hansis, similar type of haircut.
Very similar.
He's looking pretty good.
My father, you mean?
Yeah. Yes. I'm just saying. So you see him, and you see if that's my role model, that's the kind of hair I want.
Very true. All right, that's it for another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. We will be back on Friday, right?
Oh, yeah.
With another show. Make sure, by the way, you subscribe on iTunes. That's how we get
subscribe.
The glory. Dan Hansa signing off for the Sizzler. Have fun in Canton, buddy. The mailman, the boss, Sully, and the team behind the glass. Till Friday.
I've decided that that is not worthy of